Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you'll meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Thank you so much for your time, Dan. I really appreciate it. I could try to introduce you, but there's obviously so much to go on. You've done so much. I'd love for you to best introduce yourself and a little bit of your work and your backstory that gets you to where you are today.
Thanks, Josh. Yeah, I will do that. I mean, I've thought about this question, and I think the easiest way of describing it is the four stages of Dan. The first stage of Dan was university and immediately post-university. At university, I started my entrepreneurial sort of, I suppose, interest in entrepreneurial ventures. I started up a club night with a friend who's become a lifelong friend, Tom Finlay, who's one half of the band Groove Armada. And we started up the club and it was very successful. And I'll come back to Tom a little bit later because he actually became a client later in life. Immediately post-university, I took what I think a lot of university students or postgrad or graduates sort of paths that they follow by looking to try and work for a very large organization. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I went to work for PricewaterhouseCoopers as an auditor and I hated it. And I only lasted 18 months. But actually what I did get there was the support of an incredibly sort of positive partner who really believed in me. And he gave me a lot of, his name was Malcolm Preston, and he gave me a lot of really great audits. And in those audits, whilst I might have found the process very boring and dull, they demonstrated to me where large organizations were starting to spend increasing amounts of their budget technology-wise. So I was seeing lots of money going into telecommunications, data networking, this thing called the internet, which at the time, late 90s, was just sort of starting to breathe life, really, from the point of view of public awareness and perception. Anyway, I left there after 18 months, and taking that information that I'd gleaned, I then went to work for IT, an IT department at Lloyds Bank. And that was really interesting because it was a graduate trainee scheme, and it showed you different parts of the bank and what they did. So I got to see software, I got to see data networking, I got to see everything from sort of, you know, even ATM systems and everything else. So again, that demonstrated to me that the focus on things such as call centers and data networking was something which was really here to stay. That takes me into my second stage, which I've called the entrepreneurial years. And this is where I set up a number of my own ventures with other founder partners, friends. I set up a business called Sabio, which is still going today, actually. It was a systems integration business focused on call centers and telecommunications. That was an incredibly successful business. Back in the early 2000s, we were the 30th fastest growing company in the UK, Virgin Fast Track, as it was then. I think it's now Sunday Times Fast Track. But that was just one of the ventures that I started. I also started a food and beverage business called Sourced Market, which was, I suppose, in many ways, sort of borough market on your doorstep. We opened in St. Pancras Station, and then we rolled out to some other stations and other sites across the country. I also set up at this time sort of a foreign exchange platform, which is still there today, called Centrip. And at the end of this period, because the ones I've just talked to you about were all successful, there were also a number of failures in that period. And at the end of that stage, I decided, well, it's all very well, you've had some successes, but you've also had some failures. You probably don't really understand why you've had those successes and failures. So I went off and did an MBA, paid for an MBA. And that really brought to an end that sort of that entrepreneurial phase. And post-MBA, I then took a really radically sort of odd turn. I was approached by Tom Finlay and his musical partner, Andy Cato from Groove Armada, the time of massive change in the industry. So we're now talking about, you know, movement from sort of small plastic discs to downloads. We weren't even streaming yet. But they felt that my skills and knowledge would work well in a time of radical change. So I became a music manager for, I would say, a third of my working life, involved in obviously managing the careers, strategically sort of offering advice to music clients, not just Groove Armada, but they were probably my best known clients. And also music festivals. So I co-owned and ran a music festival in London called Lovebox, which we ran with great success, actually, until we sold it to Live Nation in around about 2012. And post the music years, which was stage three, I guess the last sort of 7 years, 6 or 7 years really, have been all about investment, advisory, and mentoring. So this is all about me developing a career in the areas of sort of wealth management, but working with wealth managers to better understand the creative industries, and also more generally connecting founders who want to grow their businesses, who want to grow their ideas, to different sources of capital, whether that be high net worth individuals or ultra high net worth individual angels, whether that be VC funds, or whether that be, you know, family offices. So that's really what I've been doing for the last 6 or 7 years. And that sort of brings us all the way around the four stages of Dan's.
That's amazing. And in fact, I'm going to give you full marks for this one, because not only every answer can keep you busy right now. One of the things that I usually love to talk about is a little bit of some of the brands you work with.
Yeah.
And then also whether or not you see things as like a sort of stages of your life or very much like compound experience.
Yeah.
And the four stages of Dan very much clear that. So. So the thing that I'll ask instead then, and I'd love to talk a little bit more about Lovebox, because music is obviously something that's very near to your heart, something that's very near to my heart. But also I'd love to hear a little bit about, so you see those four stages, do you see them as those very distinct four stages, or do you think they have sort of connective tissues between them?
I think they definitely have connective tissues, but I also feel that there is something which comes with experience and age. I think when I was much younger, I was much more tolerant of what I look back on now as quite crazy risk. And I think, you know, the entrepreneurial theme, I suppose, has always been there, whether that's actually doing my own stuff, whether that is actually sort of, you know, doing some crazy stuff in the music years. One of the first things I did was I took Groove Armada off of their major label deal and I signed them to Bacardi for a year. That had never really been done at the time. And the reason for that was my logic was really simple. When I went in to meet the major label bosses, they didn't really have a clue who the consumer of the music was for Groove Armada. They had no idea. And, you know, the Groove Armada were a fantastic band, but they weren't Beyonce level. You know, they were, you know, and actually I think it becomes, with majors, I think they're very, very good at a certain level of artists, but they're much less good when it comes to sort of like working with an artist who perhaps potentially is very successful in their own way, but in another way, much more niche. And so I took them off the major and we signed them to Bacardi for a year. And that made Channel 4 News with Jon Snow. That made the front page of the Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, Billboard magazine. And so for a year, we had this really crazy sort of period where we just worked with the brand to take Groove Armada's brand into lots of different territories they'd never have had the opportunity to sort of work in before. So I suppose that sort of theme of innovation, entrepreneurism has always been there. But I also think the attitude to risk over that sort of period is also, I guess, developed, so that now I'm less gung-ho, I think, with regard to what I get involved with and how I get involved with it. But that is just generally something which I think comes with age and experience.
No, that's good. That's it definitely sort of spells that there's a lot going on between the sort of separate stages of Dan, like you say. I'd love to take it back to the present day and hear a little bit more. I know you said a little bit about it there, but a little bit more about what's keeping you busy today.
Yeah, so I'm basically working with a number of a variety of different hugely exciting founders and businesses at the moment. As you can probably tell from my experience, I'm pretty sector agnostic. For me, it's much more about the people and the solution. And if I think those two things are exceptional, then I will get involved. And so at the moment, I'm invested in and I'm a shareholder in, and I work with the founder of a fit tech business called With You, a very, very fast growing business, incredibly exciting business model and employment of new technology, particularly around things such as AI, you know, the introduction of AI. I think everyone talks about AI, but businesses that really understand how to best utilize it and improve the experience for their customer or their consumer. But With You is a fantastic example of that. And I'm really excited to have been on board since the beginning. Live music and AI, I still keep my hand in, you know, I've kept the relationships and the networks. And that's a really interesting relationship I've developed with a founder of a business called GoToBeat. And GoToBeat effectively is a live music ticketing platform that incorporates AI to better match artists with venues where they're more likely to sell it out. And effectively, it utilizes AI to do that. Film and TV production, I'm working with a really exciting business called My Accomplice. They make TV shows and they make films and they make really exciting commercials as well. And again, what I find, I've always found, whether it's fitness tech, whether it's, you know, a live music ticketing platform, or whether it's a TV film production company, the creativity, people having that sort of spark of creativity, it doesn't necessarily have to be just be a creative industries project, but behind it all, the ability to think creatively, to employ new techniques creatively, to search for capital creatively, all of these things are sort of super, super important. And, you know, those are just three, but I also have a whole bunch of other new technology businesses that I'm working with at the moment. Everything from, you know, a company that effectively has developed and manufactured a really innovative new keyboard technology that effectively turns your iPhone or your Samsung into a BlackBerry, which, you know, for the younger members of the audience won't have a clue what it is, but it was quite an interesting handheld device that had its own inbuilt keyboard. But they've now made a keyboard you can attach or reattach, and that's very exciting. I'm also working with a group called ARC over in LA and North America, who have developed an AI-enabled film studio in your pocket that effectively takes over the camera and enables people involved within the film and TV industry to save time by being able to effectively magically in your kitchen or your dining room, wherever you might be, create the set and then work through the set, block out your shots that you want to look for, and also to sort of circulate in advance to people that are going to be on set so that they come well prepped and prepared. So a really, really good use case for sort of the film and TV industry. But I think also the technology has a lot of other use cases as well. So for example, I could see it working incredibly well in architecture or in the design of, construction and design, but also construction design of things like yachts, for example. But there might be big distances between those designing and those who are actually buying one of the asset. And also some other businesses as well. For example, I'm looking at the moment, I'm working with a management team who have developed an auction site that enables bidders to effectively fractionally own illiquid assets. So that could be art and antiquities, or it could be, you know, it could be property, for example, like large scales and buildings where you don't want to buy the whole thing, but you like a piece of it. So that's what's keeping me busy right now, Josh.
It sounds like there's too many plates spinning. But they're all very exciting. They're all incredible. And there's just so much to unpack there. But the one thing that I'd love to come back to is that you say you're sector agnostic, and obviously the people take the forefront of what it is that interests you. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that flips in terms of the consumer trends in your field. Like, obviously you've got your finger in a lot of different pies, like you say, because of the people, but are there any particular ones that you feel like really impact the sort of consumer trends that are going on in the world right now?
Yeah. So I would say I'm really, really proud and excited to be part of the With You story, the fitness tech, because ultimately, you know, you have a look at mental health and physical health of population, particularly Western populations globally, and you know, there are major problems there, and those major problems sort of filter through into sort of, you know, big economic numbers from the point of view of cost of care. And it's really nice to be part of something that is able to directly impact that in a positive way. And I would say, you know, over time as well, you know, that kind of opportunity to be involved with businesses where there is a genuine big impact element to them has become increasingly appealing for me. You know, I think back in the day, looking at the four stages of Dan, in the early days, it was about chasing the dollar. I think, if I'm brutally honest, it was that, you know, there was not the awareness that there is now of some of these big systemic challenges that we have around things such as health, around things such as, you know, climate, you know, problems with the earth and its natural resources, sustainability and the like. So being part of a team that is, and indeed invested in a business that is looking to fix one of those major problems, challenges the world has, and actually something that governments seem to find incredibly difficult to grasp. I mean, you know, the cost of obesity to, you know, economies globally is astronomical. I mean, it is mind-boggling, the billions that it costs. And actually, to be able to be part of something which is utilizing fantastic technology as well, you know, incorporating AI in a really, really clever and innovative way. But at its core, it's about getting people fit both in mind and body and making them feel better about themselves and actually solving a big problem to boot. So, you know, that's the kind of project that really excites me. And so of all of the businesses I'm working with at the moment, I would say that's the one that you know, I wake up every morning and look forward to the call with the CEO the most.
Awesome. It's a fantastic thing to be a part of, like you say. And again, because of all the industries that you're across, and that's a really good question that people should be asking themselves right now, is to think about it on a more systemic level, like you say. But are there any other questions that you think leaders should be asking themselves right now when it comes to the industries that they're in, what they're working on?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, we've covered usage of AI. I think, you know, everyone talks about AI, and obviously, you know, I'm from a certain generation who you know, have grown up pre-internet. You know, I was pre-internet, and I saw the internet. I saw the telecommunications revolution. And so when you start hearing about these things such as AI, it's only when you start seeing it utilized and used how it can actually make the world a better place. I think you can start to sort of compartmentalize, well, yes, you know, there will be those that are using it just to sort of do, you know, things that don't really move the needle, but they're, you know, frivolous and fun. But then there's also usage of it where it can actually genuinely, again, address some of these challenges. But we've talked about that quite a lot. So some of the other conversations that I think people should be having in my field, something that was never there when I was younger, in the earlier stages of the four stages of Dan, was the option of looking at and exploring venture debt as well as equity investment. When I was younger, it was all about equity investment. Now, the last 5 years or so, I think we've seen a rapid increase in venture debt options where, you know, there are solutions that founders can look at which don't necessarily require them to give away a portion of their business, which of course is the most expensive debt of all. So that's something which I think entrepreneurs and founders should be asking themselves more questions about. They don't always necessarily have to look at equity. Sometimes they may have to because it's their only option, because they're not at a stage where potentially that is an option. But that's something that I do think is important. I think something else we touched on, Josh, making real impact versus just making money, making a positive impact on people's lives, really, and their consumers' lives, you know, rather than just launch of a new ready-to-drink, you know, cocktail or something. You know, I think, and that's, by the way, not to denigrate that, because at the end of the day, in a lot of people's eyes, well, they're providing a product. If it's successful, that people want. But from my own perspective, you know, those are the kind of challenges and questions that I think founders should be asking themselves.
Brilliant. It's again, a fantastic answer and a really mature sort of take to how, obviously, as you progress through the stage of Dan. Sorry, I wasn't laughing at the concept of debt. I was just for some reason, the four stages of Dan will just never fail to tickle me. I find that such a great way to phrase it. Well, I've got these different eras.
But I've just realized the acronym. Four stages of Dan, unfortunately, is four.
Well, it takes on an extra layer of meaning. So
boring.
Right. Well, that leads on quite nicely to a little bit more about you as a leader. And what is it that sort of makes you tick on the day to day? Obviously, it seems to be more, you know, a process of thinking about it on a system level, thinking about how you can make a positive impact on people's lives. But instead of that, then, how would you want people to describe you and how you make change happen on your best day? Think like the best day of Dan.
I think someone who's fun to work alongside. You know, we started this conversation and we talked about the importance of having fun in this conversation. And I think it's the same with work. If you can't have fun, then that's going to be problematic for me. But again, so someone that's fun to work alongside, someone with a relentless drive and energy and a series of ideas that will hopefully help solve challenges around the project that we're working on at the time. Someone who's also not afraid to get their hands dirty. You know, I will never ask somebody to do something that I will not do myself. You know, if it's about a strategic partnership and actually, you know, reaching out cold, then, you know, I will do that. I will do that cold call. I will make that cold approach. And I think often people in my position, they will have the theory, but they won't necessarily, you know, want to walk the line. If you want to employ a Johnny Cash line there, I think, you know, they won't want to do that. They will look for others to sort of make those calls for them. And that's really very much me. Fun to work alongside, drive energy ideas, and someone who's not afraid to get their hands dirty.
And the whole phone call thing, and this is obviously thinking about it on a very superficial level, but the way of going around for so many people who are scared to make phone calls and sort of phone anxiety. And the fact that a phone isn't a phone anymore is another quite interesting element.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It's multiple forms of contact, isn't it? I mean, there was one. I had one particular situation recently where I'm working with those guys I talked about that created the film studio in your pocket over in the States. And I read an article in the Financial Times, I kid you not, 2 weeks ago, and it was all about a British company that gained investment from Middle Eastern company. They're in the whole space around visual effects, film and TV, and they'd gained $200 million worth of investment. I think their valuation was around about $2 billion. And I looked at it, and I thought, they're in that space. They're utilizing similar technologies. They're making film and TV. I don't know these guys, but I'm going to reach out and I'm going to say, look, you know, this is completely cold. I'm not expecting you to come back to me, but you know, I'm working with these guys. They've developed this technology. This is super exciting. You know, if you're not interested, just let me know. It's fine. They came back to me. The CEO came back to me within, I would say, half an hour and said, you need to speak to the guy that is, you know, backing us and you need to talk to him. Within an hour, he was on the phone and we have a call set up within the next week with the founders of the business I'm working with in the States and these guys over here in the UK. So that's a good example of a see it, do it mentality and not being scared to reach out, not being scared of someone saying to you, you know, do one. Because they could quite literally have done that, but it didn't work out that way. And that's a good example, again, I think, of how, you know, whether it's a call or whether it's an actual sort of communication, a written communication, you know, it's worth it. You know, it's worth doing. Shy Ben's getting out, as they say up there in the Northeast.
Damn right. So I was gonna put it in a more posh way and be like, nothing to lose, but Shy Ben's getting out is exactly how I would prefer to put it to. That's brilliant. And again, that's sort of tapped into a little bit about what I was going to ask you next. And when you think through the four stages of Dan, and you look back on what you've done so far, Is there any advice that you'd give to your younger self?
Yeah, I think there is. I think the first piece of advice I would give to my younger self is think very carefully before investing all of your own money. You know, there are options now whereby, but, you know, you can put some of your money in, but there are options now whereby, you know, you don't have to risk it all. You can go out and you can work alongside others who are willing to share that risk with you, whether that's debt, whether that's equity. And also, I think when I was younger, I also feel I was potentially much more prone to be very, very black and white, you know, black and white, this is good, black and white, this is bad, black and white, this is, you know, what's what we're doing. I think actually the real world is much more full of shades of grey, and you've got to really understand those shades of grey and how to, you know, navigate them and understand them best, working towards a particular sort of goal or solution or product release, whatever it might be. So those really would be the big piece of advice I'd give to young Dan. Don't risk it all.
And in the case of if you live in the UK, the shades of grey is literally as well as metaphorically. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. It is both literal and metaphorical.
No, no, that's a really great thing to point out. The don't risk it all, obviously, but the shades of grey is a really, really important thing to think of is, people are so much more complex than just if and or but.
Yes, exactly. And I think from a leadership perspective, that collegiate approach is always something I've been very, very keen on, is making sure that I surround myself with people, if I'm honest, who I think in some way, shape or form are better than me. And I think often leaders are not like that. I think they like people around them that think they are the best thing since sliced bread. That's my experience anyway.
That leads in really nicely to a little sort of set of quick fire questions. I had an on-call question, but we'll have a second on-call. Why not? Can your friends or could your friends explain what you do?
I think the answer to that is probably no. I think my family probably couldn't, to be honest with you. It's only the last couple of years that my boys have got 21 and 19, that they've started to, I think, appreciate that I am involved in the entrepreneurial process, you know, and always have been. But before that, it was very much like, well, what does your dad do? Well, you know, it's a non-standard career path. You know, oh, he works here, he works in this sector, or he has this particular sort of role. And I think that's quite difficult for a kid to kind of get their head around. So, or indeed, and certainly, you know, that's my family. I'm coming home every night to them. So I'm sure that my friends would have a difficult time sort of explaining exactly what it is that I did.
And if they could, what would you want them to say?
I'm somebody who is passionate and has expertise in helping founders grow their ideas. That's it in a nutshell.
And speaking of wonderful, you've given some really great advice over the past sort of half an hour or so. I'd love to know, what is the best piece of advice you've been given?
The best piece of advice I've been given was to always work with people that you feel are better than you. And I've always done that. It was Malcolm, I think Preston at PricewaterhouseCoopers all those years ago, who said to me, just always surround yourself with people that you think are better than you, and don't be scared of them, embrace them. And that's the biggest bit of advice, I think, best bit of advice I've been given.
And what is one thing that you could not live without?
You ask what, which is important, because it's not who, and that would have been more problematic. This is actually quite an interesting one. It's my analog vintage 1980s wristwatch, because I love it. You know, we're in a digital world, and there's, you know, I could have on my wrist so many different items, but I think it's a thing of beauty. I'll never change it until it falls apart, and it's over 40 years old. And as long as I service it every year, it still keeps incredible time. So it would be my 1980s wristwatch.
Yep, textbook of it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
In which case it needs servicing, but then fix it.
Yeah. Exactly. No, don't fix it. Just keep it going.
Yeah. And that brings us to our final question. It's a question we ask everyone. And it is, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how weird are you, Dad?
Do you know what? I don't see myself. You might think differently after this, John. I don't see myself as that weird. So I'm going to say a 6. I'm definitely unconventional. I don't think I'm weird. I definitely feel I'm a tad unconventional. But I don't class that as ultra weird. So I'd say a 6.
And that's a wonderful place to leave it for now, Dan. I really appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Josh.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.